Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Peter Frederickson is a Chicago-based machine embroidery artist whose animation-inspired pieces capture tension and terror. This is the second part of our needle exchange, and if you missed the first part, make sure you go back and listen to how Peter came to make these works that are just so cool. There's something about the work, there's something about his use of cartoon that makes these images work so well, and the fact that we see these cartoons in our childhood and we just let it wash over us, sticks of TNT blowing up Porky Pig, you know the kind of thing we're talking about. Yet what Peter does is he captures these moments, whether it's before the action, after the action, or now during the action. He captures the violence, he pinpoints it with his fully formed machine embroidered pieces and gives us pause for thought. There's darkness in there, there's humour in there, his choice of titles pivoting the work in either direction, and it's just really great to see the way he's doing what he's doing. I loved talking with Peter. I could have talked with Peter for a heck of a lot longer. This is the second part of the Needle Exchange. Obviously, we find out about his all-time favourite album of all time. He makes some confessions right at the end that were very honest and true and a little bit illegal. So I'll just open that hook for you there. But honestly, Peter's work is fantastic. Be sure to go and check him out on Instagram. And if you like this work, please do share this episode with somebody else who you think will enjoy it. I will be back next week with another conversation with another part of the needlework ecosystem. So until then, enjoy the show. There's a book I really like called Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. It's a comic book about comic books. And one of the things he says is that if you kill somebody between panels, you offer them 1,000 different deaths, you know, and there was always that thing about the storytelling, because it's in panels and it's sequential art, there's scope to play within those. And what I was just thinking then is, like, if you've got your Wile E. Coyote giant slingshot, imagine if you just stop it before he fires off that slingshot and you just leave that hanging there. Like, to me, that would be epic. And that, to me, feels like that's what you've been doing with a lot of your work.
I really have, yeah. I leave it open-ended at times. And, like, even the version on the other side where you see what has happened, you have no concept of what got you there. You can, like, it's implied, maybe, or like, at best, like, you understand where it's coming from. Like, you under, like, you have a concept of these old cartoons, and you can kind of determine what could have gotten you there. But yeah, it's context is removed, and it's up to the viewer to ascribe meaning.
And I just love the fact that it's reminding me, there's an artist called Tanya Bucal who did a series of cross-stitch pieces that explored the refugee crisis and migrant, you know, people fleeing countries, and how the news kind of just shows us so many images of them that we get numb to it. And what she does is, by doing cross-stitch portraits of the people in the boats, it rehumanizes them. It makes you rethink about the situation that they're in, because you're looking at it, you're going, it's in stitch format. I suddenly realize that's a human, not just a person in a boat that I've disconnected from.
Yeah.
And yours applies the same technique, because you're going, this person has got 75 sticks of dynamite. They are about to obliterate the shit out of someone. Do you know what I mean? And even though it's in a cartoon context, you're still going, Jesus Christ, look at the violence on that.
And this is for, you know, at least when it was made, it was for adults. But it's for kids since then.
Mm.
Like, you go to an amusement park and you hug these characters, like, as a child, you know? This is, it's, they're on the side of a Coca-Cola can. And they are the things that you, like, have your cereal and watch. Like, it is, it's interesting. At the very least, it's interesting, yeah.
And you've done, I mean, you've done loads of pieces of work now, haven't you, really?
Yeah, I counted how many I did last year. I had a busy year last year to a point where it was a little much. I broke myself a little bit. I did 63 pieces last year, more than a piece a week. And like, I had 3 solo shows last year, which is great, but also it was a lot. So I'm taking it a little easier moving forward. I need to not be doing that to myself. I want to give myself time to figure out new styles and figure out new methods and see what it takes to make a swirl, you know?
So how much of those 63 pieces, how many of those were born because you just had these ideas coming out? And then how many of these were like, holy shit, I've got a show to do?
I mean, I think that I think they're one and the same, but or they can be, at least. I don't feel like I made anything from last year, the 63. I don't think that anything was like especially like I felt like I was just meeting a quota.
Right.
But at the same time, like I did a show in Milan, and I loved the work, but there was one concept in the show that I really kind of like hammered home. And when I say hammered home, I made 6 pieces about it.
Which one was that?
It was all different like versions of chopping down a tree. Like different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and they were all the same size, and they were all like, they were very different, but the concept was the same. And, I look at that and I think, like, man, did I need to do 6? Probably not. But, like, I enjoyed making every one of them, and I enjoy how different they all are. And, fuck, I've got, like, 3 other, like, tree chopping pieces that I want to make. So, you know, like, it's not for naught, but I definitely, like, I remember at the time being like, is this 6th one really hammering anything home, or is it just like I really wanted to have a decent amount of work in this show? It's hard to say.
I liked your no. I liked all the no's.
Thank you. So that one, same idea. I mean, certainly, like, I wasn't feeling the pressure to make 5 different no pieces, but I thought that it was a really funny, very, like, you know, what a silly approach to, like, protesting. So, like, that escalation felt very fun and funny to me, and also, like, kind of pathetic, which is a lot of what I'm doing.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. What was the other thing I was going to ask you about? You did a piece. You were in a show in Chicago to do with the Chicago Bulls. And
yeah.
The only other person from Chicago that I've interviewed was Emma McKee, and I was just wondering whether you were in the show together, because I can't imagine there being a Chicago art show involving textiles that she's not involved in.
God, do I know Emma McKee?
Stitch God, cross stitches.
Oh my God, I love her work. Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, she definitely had work in that show. And more than that, her work was, like, massive. She made pennants. So, I believe. But yeah, these, like, huge pennants that were singing the praises of the Chicago Bulls. And, like, I am, you know, I like Chicago sports because I am born and raised Chicago. And, like, I grew up watching Michael Jordan. But, like, not really either, because I'm not a sporty person. I do embroidery.
If you live in Chicago in the 90s, you'd be a fool not to be in love with the Bulls, right?
Exactly right. So, like, to get that opportunity, like, holy shit, yeah. Jumped at the opportunity to make anything that any one of the you know, anyone in the Bulls, like, world could possibly even think to look at. Yeah, it was great. Very cool. And, yeah, Emma, I mean, like, her work is just nuts. The stuff that she's doing is just gorgeous.
I feel like you're both a good fit for Chicago. I've only been there once. What the hell do I know? But it's just like, I know that Chicago is a really creative city, but it's not, it's like an unorthodox creative city. You know, when I was talking to Emma, she said that there's this poetry about it being a slightly unattractive woman that you love. You know, that's what Chicago is. It's not a pretty city, but it's a city that you can kind of love. And that's where this, like, outsider philosophy about art comes from. You know, the stuff that you're doing, the inherent darkness of it, just feels like it's a really great fit for that kind of
content. I appreciate that. I really do. I would definitely attribute a lot of my, just, like, the way that I think to the city that I grew up near and in. Like, of course. And, you know, I love the like, unattractive woman that you love. Like, I think this maybe speaks to my having been here for my whole life, but, like, I think Chicago's beautiful. Some really real ugly politics, no question, which is maybe, yeah, like, you know, you take Chicago for, like, the good and the bad, I guess, and, like, you call out the bad as often as possible, but you appreciate the good as much as possible as well. Like, I feel really lucky to be here. And the art community in Chicago is so much of what Chicago's known for is the kind of, like, DIY sensibility. Like, artists and artist-run spaces that, I mean, the galleries that we've got here, the, like, bigger galleries are big for a reason. They're great, but, like, when I think about Chicago galleries, at least a few years ago, pre-COVID probably, but, like, certainly still less so, but still, I think about artist-run, like, apartment galleries, people that take half of the place that they live and turn it into something like an art space. Like, they open the doors to people once a month and they show work out of their homes. And there's just something so beautiful about that, you know? I think it's artists doing it for themselves. It's very cool.
Do you get to tap into much of that, or are you a bit of a lone wolf when it comes to your making?
I regrettably don't show a lot in Chicago. Like, I just don't. I feel like I've shown
just
the
most. Showing in Milan instead, by the way.
Yeah. I feel like the place where I've shown the most is in the UK, to be honest. I have shown a decent amount there, which is phenomenal. But, like, yeah, I don't know what it is. I haven't been able to crack the code in Chicago. I feel like I've connected with a lot of people here, and some of my favorite artists are in Chicago, but I just, it hasn't quite worked out.
I'll have a word with Emma. Emma just owns Please. The place. I think she might be the mayor of Chicago in about 13 years' time or something. Rather,
you know, it might even be less time than that.
I wanted to ask you about the names of your pieces, because the names of your pieces are an important part of the puzzle.
That's true, yeah. As I'm making work, and you know, these take time, like the fastest that I can possibly make a piece is like, you know, 10, 12 hours, something like that. And I think I can count maybe three of those that I've ever made that quickly. I'm sitting with these for a long time and I'm thinking about the concept as I'm going. It's not like I'm working blind, like I am constantly.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Thinking about it as I'm working on it, and it this is not to disparage anybody else's practice or anybody else's like naming convention, but I can't fathom working on something and putting, you know, thought and love into a piece and giving it a name that is just untitled. I just, like, if it's like I just don't, it's not how my mind works. So anytime I'm making a piece, I'm thinking about what that title is going to be. Sometimes it's the first thing that comes to me, and sometimes it is something that happens like weeks later as I am like thinking about other work and it dawns on me like, oh, that's obviously what this is called. But I try to add to the work with the title as much as possible. If that is something that is clarifying, or if that is something that is abstracting, or something that is adding humor, or maybe even a sense of seriousness, like, I want each title to make sense. I want it to work with the piece. It feels like it's as much a part of it as the piece itself, you know?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable, because it's like a lot of the images, you know, up until recently have been very static. They've been a moment in time. There's no movement there whatsoever. So it's almost like you're offering like the aside or the narration over the top, aren't you? Like the stage whisper about it or something like that.
It's a clarifier, yeah. It is something that can really help to give guidance to the piece. Because, yeah, sometimes they are like, They're abstract to a point where, you know, you see somebody, like, hanging on for dear life, like, on a cliffside or something like that, and because it's cartoon, like, you think it's supposed to be funny, but then, you know, a title can help to make you realize that it's actually, like, this is desperation. This is...
this is a very bad... There was one you had a little while ago that was, it's, what have you called it? Options are dwindling, where someone's slowly having their fingers removed from
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, that's the kind of, like, perfect example where, like, you know, in the cartoon that I took some of the imagery from, like, and, you know, to be clear, my process involves, like, manipulation of these images. Like, I'm taking inspiration from these, and it's so rare that I'm copying something exactly from one of these cartoons. But, like, that image, for example, is, like, probably, like, two or three different, like, cartoons superimposed on each other. Anyway, to take something that is played for laughs and to give it a title, Options Are Dwindling, like, this is it. It's quickly become a piece about desperation and about, like, it's not quite yet a call for help. It's not quite yet, like, you know, It's implied that that's next, you know?
Yeah, and I see you go you go in either direction. Sometimes when something's really obviously violent, then you put a smile on it. Your guy kind of just make us laugh it off a little bit more. And then in those kind of places, you're like, I'm just going to put the jeopardy in there, just in case it wasn't clear.
Exactly right. Yes, yeah. It's just, you know, titles are important. They're shown next to a piece, you know? Like, if you're showing work, if you put an image of your work on Instagram, like, the title's right there. And I feel like without that, you're not getting the full picture.
Mm.
And that's, yeah, this has always been my thinking when it comes to titling work. But also, I don't know, I would maybe, if I didn't have such a, like, love for the written word, maybe it would be a different thing. I don't know. I revere good writing. Mm. So it's hard to not throw my hat into that ring when
I
can.
Do you take notes? Have you got like a sketchbook? Do you have ideas? Just like someone could say something, you'd be like, oh, I'll part that.
Certainly. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I have scribbles all over the place. I don't necessarily have a single book. I used to do that, but I don't go anywhere now, so I sit at home. All of my scribbles are either emails to myself, or like sometimes it will be like as I'm working on something, I'll just grab a pencil and write down on a scrap of paper or like an unopened letter or something, and then I will send it in an email to myself later.
Nice. I only recently discovered you can send WhatsApps to yourself. I've been using WhatsApp for years.
What a helpful tool.
Yeah,
not that there's any lack of ways to like give yourself a reminder or to like take a note. Like, you know, there's a notes app on everybody's phone. But anyway, yeah.
I just send positive messages to myself. I'm like, yeah, you're doing a great job, Charles.
Yeah. Keep going.
I wanted to ask you about in the spring of 2023, you went through a furniture phase. And I just thought that was an interesting to observe. You were just like, I really like chairs at the moment.
That was definitely a COVID response. This is like,
PTSD or something.
Spending a lot of time inside. And this is, it had been building up for a while. But it was those pieces. So it's kind of like three different versions of it. So there's the stacked furniture that is like an attempt to reach something that is otherwise out of reach, but like in the most haphazard way possible.
Yeah. Usually balanced on top of a bowling ball or something,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. For whatever reason, ladders don't exist. Yes. So there's the stacked furniture. There's then the version of it where the furniture has fallen.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's like the mess that that creates. And then that's usually like a 1-2 punch. But then there's piled furniture that is used as a barricade. So something that gets put up against a door to keep something out. Mm. So I was thinking about a lot of these as I was making them, but thinking about COVID specifically and like thinking about how we had all been just stuck indoors. We had been relegated to our living spaces and the sense of safety that you get from four walls and a locked door and the poking the holes in that sense of safety, I kept thinking about like the bastardization of a living space, like turning a living space into something else and like rearranging it, like truly taking everything in the spot where you're supposed to feel safe and changing it on its face, either with a purpose or without, like really just like, you know, seeing a pile of furniture, seeing a pile of furniture either like in shambles after like a failed attempt at something, or as a like safeguard, as like a method to keep yourself safe and healthy. It's like it felt sad to me. Felt sad. Yeah, yeah. So those are sad pieces.
Interestingly as well, like the style of the furniture as well. They're almost like classic American tales because of classic American furniture.
It's very mid-century. Yeah. Very. I was that's all on purpose, but yeah, you're seeing some like mid-century modern, but then you're also seeing some like, you know, slightly older, more antique pieces, and I mean, shit, that's what I've got in my house.
you ever watch the New Yankee Workshop?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, so New Yankee Workshop is a carpentry program, and there's a guy called Norm Abrams who was an excellent carpenter. He's like presumably from the Midwest or something like that, and he'd just go around some American house from like the early 1900s and go, oh, I love that Shaker style cabinet, and then he'd go back and make it in his like amazing workshop or whatever. Some of the most soothing television you're ever going to see. You don't ever see him like putting all the jigs and bits together, but he's just like, now I've set up my jig, and now he's just going to plane some wood and gets all the way through to the French polishing and stuff, and it just makes you really appreciate like Shaker style armchairs or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
It sounds beautiful. I love it. Yeah,
very satisfying. I commissioned a plush toy version of Norm Abrams that now lives in my daughter's bedroom. She don't know who he is. It can't be bothered to explain. He's just Norm.
Just Norm.
Just Norm. Just random. Right. I want to, as we cross the hour mark with Gay Abandon, let's get down in the weeds. Let's talk about your favourite things. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm so ready.
Let's start. Because I still haven't really worked my questions out. You're like episode number 61, and I still don't know how to answer this question properly. But let's talk about music. What are your favourite music things?
Okay, favourite music things. If we're talking about like
favorite band,
I've got certainly favorite bands, like, but you know, to be honest, it's so I'm gonna give you my favorite album,
okay,
which is undoubtedly like this is the only one that I had a true answer for.
Mm-hmm.
Voodoo by D'Angelo.
Okay.
Do you know
D'Angelo? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sexy fucking album.
Jesus. Yeah, and also just like, what a it is sexy, and it is so human. It's the everything that you think about when you think about like R&B, and when you think about like even the like especially like the sampling that goes into making an R&B record, like this is the antithesis of that. Everything feels ever so slightly by a hair offbeat, and it's on purpose. It's like D'Angelo himself talks about recording that record and how Questlove was the drummer on that record. He's been the drummer on I think all of D'Angelo's records, but he's a metronome, Questlove. He's too perfect, and D'Angelo kept saying it can't be. It has to be imperfect. And you hear it and it feels so alive. It's like the most epic non-epic thing. And like, yeah, you know, people think about that record and they're like, yeah, I've totally fucked to that record. And it's like, that's great. Awesome. It's super sexy. Also, you should just put some good headphones on and just like get lost in it.
Because that was only his second album, wasn't it? Like he did Brown Sugar.
Sure was.
That was quite
Brown
a long
Sugar
time
was
before,
first.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
quite a long time in between.
That's right. Yeah. And then there's a long time since he did Black Messiah, which is his third, which came after Voodoo. Yeah. He takes his time with them. And like, it works.
How old were you when you first heard it?
Oh shit. I mean, I certainly heard that. I knew the song Untitled, which, you know, callback. I knew the song Untitled. But I don't know that I really listened to the record until I heard his song with Method Man and Redman called Left and Right. there was some, like, that song was definitely a little bit more like, you know, it had like rap verses in it, which is not what you necessarily attribute to D'Angelo, but like, I heard that and I was like, oh, that's a fucking great song. I think I was realistically, you know, like, I don't know, 18, something like that, like probably just entering into college. And, oh man, I went and I sought out the full record, and just from that moment, it's just, it changed music for me in a huge way. Like, it, I felt like everything that, like, there was pre-voodoo and there's post-voodoo. And
nice.
It's because it's hard to not compare everything else mm-hmm. to that perfect record.
Yeah. So, yeah. Technically now we're in the year 24 AV. 24 after Voodoo. Would that be
that's
right?
Correct. Yeah, yeah, that's just about it.
I mean, yeah. So what other, I mean, are you a hip-hop kid? Are you a bit of everything kid? I feel like you're probably
eclectic.
A bit of everything.
Yeah, pretty eclectic. Recently I've been really into, like, you know, like 1950s country. Like, there's Buck Owens, been really, really into Buck Owens, Conway Twitty, which is a little bit closer to, you know, 60s country, but, like, yeah, I there's something about that brand of country music that I really like. Contemporary country is just, it's not for me, but that's fine, it's for other people. Always really liked, you know, like, grunge style, like, another one of my favorite records is, Bossa Nova by Pixies.
Okay.
Just really, really dig the kind of like brash qualities, you know, like there's equal parts like jangly and hard, and also like at times very sweet music from Pixies. Radiohead, of course. Love Radiohead, you know, hard to deny Radiohead. Mm-hmm. Kid A and Amnesiac, those two, that 1-2 punch is just like...
Didn't they mesh those together? Haven't they done a Kid Amnesiac?
Hell yeah, they have, yeah. And it was, I own it, it's really good. yeah, those two, I mean, you know, they're like two sides of that same coin. It's...
And shout out to Rage Against the Machine as well, I think, right?
Oh, couldn't hurt. Yeah, absolutely. There was something about Battle of Los Angeles that raised mm-hmm. me.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
amazing. Do you listen to music while you're working?
Sometimes I'm listening to music. Sometimes I'm listening to television or movies. Mm-hmm. But yes, yeah. I can't work in silence. It's mm-hmm. just not how I function. Yeah.
Let's move on to TV and movies in that case then. Do you have a favorite movie? It's a smooth segue that I was quite proud.
Okay, so this one was really hard for me. I had to write some notes down. So apologies. I'm not gonna read them, I'm just referencing. So Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut.
Okay.
No question. It's top five. Yeah.
Really?
Eyes Wide Shut is a like what a crazy movie about like transactional relationships and about Tom Cruise in that movie. I'm such a sucker for Tom Cruise. Also on my list is literally anything he does, but also like especially the Mission Impossible movies, even Mission Impossible 2.
Okay.
People, you know, like it's there's stuff to like there. It's not the best one, it's the worst one, but they're all fucking great. But yeah, Eyes Wide Shut, it's just so tense. And it's got that like very classic, like stilted kind of it lulls you into itself. The thing that Kubrick does, you know, like you are on his time. Like a conversation will drag. Words will drag, and it's once your heart stops beating fast. It starts beating in time with the way the movie moves, and then it just ramps up. It's phenomenal. It plays your emotions like a harp.
I saw that at the cinema, I think, but I was quite, you know, as a student at the time, and so I probably need to revisit it, because it was mostly just being about, like, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, the right people in the right place at the right time with the right director and all that, wasn't it? It was like, this is going to be some hot shit.
Well, yeah, certainly that was, like, what was surrounding the movie, and then it ended up being really fucking dark.
Yeah, I need to get into that.
Oh, yeah, it's worth it. I'm going to clue you into this right now. It is a good Christmas movie. It's not, like, a good...
Not for the whole family. Christmas.
No. But, like, if you know, once the lights are up and, like, it's chilly and everything, put on Eyes Wide Shut. You'll appreciate it.
And maybe follow it up with Elf just to replenish
yourself afterwards. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, you can reset however you want.
That sounds good. Come on, then. What other ones are on the hit list?
So I love The Master by Paul Thomas Anderson. That is the one that is, like, loosely about Scientology and about L. Ron Hubbard. It's Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams, Philip Seymour Hoffman. It is very manipulative. It is very, like, it feels like a Thomas Pynchon novel that, like, he never wrote. It's fucked up. It's beautiful. It is meditative at times, and, like when I say meditative, I mean, like, there are scenes that last, it feels, it's probably 20 seconds of Joaquin Phoenix, like, running, like, full speed, just, like, running and huffing, and you hear his feet pounding, and, like, but it feels like minutes, and you can get lost in it. It's really, really nice. I guess I like an atmosphere.
I was going to say, a lot of these, the two you've mentioned so far, films that take you part out of your comfort zone, you know, running for longer than you feel like you should have been watching that.
Yeah, like right. That, you know? Yeah. I absolutely. Yeah. And then it could be my most watched film, Ghost.
Oh, really?
Ghost.
Wow.
Ghost is a movie that I could, if I were to watch it tonight, I would love it. And then if somebody were to suggest tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, hey, you want to watch Ghost? I would say, yes, I do. Absolutely. There's just something, everything about Ghost is electric. I love Ghost. It's just so, like, it's sexy, and it's sad, and it's frustrating, and it's hilarious. It's so good. Ghost is one of my favorite movies.
I feel like that does skew the algorithm that I was just building in my head about you, but
that's okay.
No, yeah, I'm totally glad. Do you watch much telly? Have you got any, like, classic TV shows?
Oh, yeah, I love television. Yeah, love television. Well, I mean, you know, Looney Tunes goes without saying, but The Simpsons helped to shape my sense of humor, and I am one of those people where it's, like, really seasons 2 through 8.5 are the ones, like, anything beyond that, and it's pretty iffy. So love The Simpsons. Seinfeld, best show ever made. It is just a joke every, like, 10 seconds, and each one of them is perfect. Like, it is truly just, it's a beautiful show. Have you ever seen the show Hannibal?
No? Is that the one about Hannibal Lecter with Mads? Is it Mads?
With Mads Mikkelsen. Yeah. And Hugh Dancy. That's, like, one of those shows. I mean, it's all about a cannibal, and every single plate of food that they show just looks so delicious. It is perverse. It's so sick. I love it. Yeah. Really, really like that.
Did Dexter ever float your boat?
You know, I liked the first couple seasons for sure. Yeah. It was never one that, like, I, like, needed to watch, you know, but I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Weirdly, though, when they, because they did a kind of, not a reboot, but they came back to him, didn't they? left me cold. I watched about half an hour and couldn't be bothered. I was just like, I don't see it. I don't see the point. Well, sort of, you know?
Sometimes you just can't go back again, you know?
Yeah. Whereas the first couple of seasons, that particularly one with John Lithgow in it.
I remember that season as being really good.
That was
yes.
a good one. Yeah. Okay. So then books is the final part of the trilogy. Come on then.
Okay, so I also wrote some things down for this, and again, just notes. So I have, like, my real answers, and then I have my, like, I want to sound educated answers.
Okay, well, so let's talk posh voices. What are the books you want people to think you read?
There we go, yes. East of Eden.
Okay.
By John Steinbeck.
Mm-hmm.
Genuinely such a beautiful and like... Oh man, it's a tome. Mm-hmm. It is so intense, and it's just about, like, you know, a family. It's just familial. It is generational, biblical for sure. But like, there's I understood reading it why it was a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Understood it. Yeah. No Country for Old Men. Everything by Cormac McCarthy. I haven't read his two last books, but I've read, I think, everything else. Mm. And, I mean, if I was really trying to be a snob, I would absolutely say what's the most famous one?
Road.
Not The Road. It doesn't matter. No Country for Old Men is a, like, supremely readable book of his. Mm-hmm. It is like an easy read almost, and it just absolutely reads like a screenplay. What an incredible adaptation, that movie, by the way. Like, that's, it is just...
Is that a Joaquin again?
Say again?
Is Joaquin Phoenix in that as well? Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, that's There Will Be Blood.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No Country for Old Men is Tommy Lee Jones, Javier Bardem, and Josh Brolin.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm totally going to edit my stupidity out of that one.
Edit it. That's fine. Yeah.
Is it Blood Meridian? That seems to be one of his
That's the one. Thank you, Jesus. Yeah, but what an incredible book that I had to, like read, you know, additional materials to like, fully understand. Right. Like poetic. Mm. Every sentence in that book is like a genuine poem, but it also can be kind of hard to follow if you're not, like, I'm not a fast reader. I love to read. I'm not a fast reader. So, like, I read some supplemental materials for Blood Meridian.
Okay.
So then my more real answers, mm-hmm. Have you ever read House of Leaves? By Mark Danielewski. That's like a kind of dorky answer, but like it's good. It's it's like a horror story and a love story kind of meet, and mm-hmm. it's written in a very interesting way. Like, you have to, like, turn the book multiple times, and there are all sorts of footnotes and everything. Once you get a feel for how to read it, it becomes a breeze. But, like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's fun. Ted Chiang, his short stories. You'll know the movie Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the short story that's based on.
Oh, cool.
There's this story that I can never stop thinking about it. It's called, I wrote it down. Let me not butcher this. The Life Cycle of Software Objects. It's, from his collection called Exhalation, and it's like all about people that like are trying their hardest to preserve their love for obsolete technology. So, like, you know, it's like do you remember, like, a Gigapet, like a Tamagotchi?
Yeah.
Imagine that, for example, but like the slightly more advanced, and like it's about a group of people that had these, and they, like, joined message boards, and they're like, you know, I love caring for my Tamagotchi, for my digital pet, And, like, this digital pet learns, and it grows and evolves, and, like, it's all because people lovingly teach them. But then the new version comes out, and so many pets are left to just, like, they're not deleted, they are just, like, left to exist because former owners have moved on to their new ones. So it's about, you know, like... It ends up being about, like, concepts of consciousness, really, and it's also, like the will to live, like, to self-determination. It is beautiful and really sad. And short, it's an easy read, pretty quick.
Yeah. That sounds good. It was making me think about my MySpace profile.
Never mind.
Is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Peter Fredrickson?
Yeah, so I feel like I don't have so I've got one real answer and one maybe a little bit more like secret answer. So yeah, my real answer, I think the reason I've got two is because I think that people I'm an open book, man. People are going to know about me because I talk about myself. So, like, I have a collection. Mm-hmm. My collection is of miniature toilets, which is, you know, like, my cutesy answer. So, like, I have way too many.
How many is too many miniature toilets?
I think I've got about 50.
How many is just enough miniature toilets?
Well, when I hit that number, I'll let you know.
So what are they like? Like from dolls' houses, those kind of things.
Yeah, so like some of them are, you know, so small, like one, I think that's like a 1/24 size or something like that. And then, yeah, they, you know, range somewhere in there, though. Like,
do they have to be realistic?
No.
Do people send you them now? Like, are we just in the toilet?
I've had some people send me toilets. Yeah, like two people have sent me toilets, which is, you know, what a treat.
I've got a toilet I'm going to send you.
So, oh, my God. I will accept. I will accept. Yeah. I want it. So, and then my real answer, because, like, I feel like that's not a secret at all. You know, sometimes I just like to steal things.
Okay.
Yeah, slight theft. And it's not like big things. It's like groceries. Like, you know, like I'll go to the store and just like... And I'm not pocketing either. Like, what I do is I just confidently walk out with it. And I have no real reason. It's just like a little rush. It's just a little kleptomania. And,
tiny act of rebellion. I'm not. Yeah. I mean, nobody's listening because obviously it's just me and you talking. So,
right.
There's a supermarket that I go to sometimes, and what I like to do is I'll buy like pastries because they sell pastries. And imagine there's a pastry that costs £1, and there's a pastry that costs 50p, and they weigh about the same. So what I do is I put the pastry for £1 through as the one that is the 50p one, and take myself a 50p saving.
Which is like that is stealing. But also, you're paying for something, so like it's not. Yeah,
I feel like I'm just rebalancing the fight against profit mongers.
Exactly right. My whole thinking here is it's not a problem because I haven't been caught. Like when it's a, it'll be a problem when somebody, you know,
yeah.
stops me at the door. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Until that happens, I'm going to keep doing it.
I also was listening to a podcast recently where I think if you confess to doing a crime on a podcast, you can't really be arrested for it because it's not... It's just you saying that. Who's to say whether any of what we've said is true?
Exactly right. Yeah. But also, this is true. I do this. I dare you.
It's Peter Aloysius Fredrickson. This is my truth. That's fantastic. Hey, Peter, thank you so much for having a needle exchange with me.
Jamie, it's been a pleasure. This is really fun.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle-exchange. See you next time.